Hi, and you're very welcome to this week's episode of the Women's Premier Division podcast here on Final Whistle. The rebrand has kind of caught us a little bit by surprise. We haven't quite got around to rebranding here yet, but it is, of course, all women's soccer in the domestic league here in Ireland. And I'm joined once again by Aaron Clark to chat all things WNL, WPD, whatever way you like to describe it, Aaron, yourself.
Absolutely. We're still trying to figure that out. We'll get there. But listen, another packed show and a bit of an entertaining weekend. You sort of said last week, would you be eating humble pie about some results? Will we about one or two? Maybe. I think there was definitely one shock. The other one, maybe not as much of a shock, but it was a good weekend of football. And our guest who we'll speak to in a little bit will be really happy because her side's sitting out in front of the top of the league.
Absolutely. We'll chat to Lorna Callaghan in just a couple of moments. Of course, fullback for Piemont, and we'll be getting her opinion on how the season has gone for them at the start of the season. I'm sure she'll be quite happy to be top of the league at this stage. But I suppose you did mention those two. I wouldn't necessarily call them shock results. The Galway result is probably a shock from the outside looking in. The Sligo one, I think if you're familiar with the league and you know kind of the changes that have happened in Treaty in particular over the last couple of weeks, you kind of wouldn't be that surprised by it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. I watched a good bit of this game and I was really impressed at a couple of the Treaty United players going up top. Her name is definitely going to elude me now. The American forward was superb for them and had a couple of chances. And you know, they sort of thought, okay, this is going to be interesting. Then when they go behind, I think the character they showed as well was probably the most important thing, because go behind again after having a bad defeat the week before, it's easy just to drop the heads. And they didn't. And I think that was the most impressive thing. And the fact that they've got a picked up a win, they didn't win a game last year, it's a massive step on. Alvin Heiss is really, he's really rejuvenated them after the loss. But when he spoke to us, you could see that he was doing things that were to try and change things. So from their point of view, I think it's a really, really positive result. And they've an opportunity again this week to get another good result before the international break.
Yeah, Claire Winter, I think, is the name you're looking for.
That's the one
conversation we had earlier in the week. I do have the luxury of having the teams here in front of me, so it does kind of make it a bit easier on my side. The Galway result, though, Shells at home against a team they're expected to beat. They score in maybe the third minute of the match. I think everybody who follows the league would have put whatever money they had available on Shells winning that match from there. Would they be disappointed?
The funny thing is Gemma Quinn had a great opportunity to make it 2-0 when she hits the post early on, and you started thinking, okay, that's a chance. But Galway just grew into the game, and I think for the fact that more Shells retreated and just kept going back and back and back, Galway just got into it. Gemma McGinn was very good. Jenna Slattery, superb. I think from Shells, once the first goal went in, you're sort of thinking, okay, this is going to be interesting. And then they were hit with a second one quick on, and then, to be honest with you, they huffed and puffed, and like, you can't say that Galway didn't deserve the 3 points. It was a brilliant performance from Phil Trill's side, and it was sort of a bit of a result that maybe, yes, it was a bit of a shock to some people, but they've done good aspects in certain games, just hadn't found the net, and they were able to find it twice, and defence held up for them.
Yeah, I think defence is something we'll chat about with Shells in just a few moments. So first, maybe let's take a look at the defence across the city at Piemont United, and let's bring in our guest for today, and that is Lauren O'Callaghan, of course, trusty right-back for Piemont United. She's been involved in all the successes in recent years as well. Lauren, you're very, very welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
It's great to have you on the show, and I suppose to look inside the Piemont camp at the moment. There's been a lot of turmoil in the club over the last 6 months, some players in, players out, a lot of new faces in that dressing room. You'd have been forgiven, given all of that change, to maybe not have had the best start to the season, but you've decided, no, we want to be top of this league, and you've done exactly that. Four wins on the bounce, only one goal conceded. You've got to be happy over in PRL Park.
Yeah, you're spot on. I think that's kind of a direct reflection of what the kind of management alongside Karen, what they have kind of orchestrated and considered as important kind of elements in preparation for that first league game against Athlone. You know, we haven't just won four games out of four just by luck, and the score lines reflect that as well. There's been a lot of hard work gone into pre-season. It's the fittest squad that I've ever been a part of in Piemont, as well as other important things. But we're really happy with the consistency that we've shown so far, but it's still very early as well at the same time.
You mentioned Karen Duggan, a leader on the field, a leader off the field. Everybody was convinced she was gone to Shamrock Rovers last year. when the off season, when Karen decides to stay, what does that do for the group?
Yeah, straight away it just shows the kind of influence that she has as a leader in terms of seeing the players that did stay at Piemont, that did want to follow Karen and follow the management that's in place and the people that are around Piemont, the players that we have in the team, they want to stay there for that reason. Karen's done great in helping the management in terms of the recruitment process and other things as well. But it's great having Karen as a captain. She's a really good person on and off the pitch.
In terms of the management, you've mentioned a couple of times as a collective, but of course, one of them quite well. You're probably in his house right now. Your dad, of course, James, is the manager of the team. What's that like having the manager in the car on the way home, potentially at home over dinner? Like, how does that work out for you?
Yeah, a lot of people would ask me that, and I don't think it's a very kind of exciting question to ask from my perspective. But like, it's fine. It's I'm very used to it now. It's not something that I'd be consciously aware of. It's difficult at times during kind of hard losses or defeats. If conflicts happening, it's hard because you kind of. It's more personalized, but it's fine.
How did you deal with it last year, especially because there was a couple of times where it was evident after games where he was started giving dressing downs to the team about performances and stuff like that. How was that when you is it easy for you to switch off though? Because other players maybe they walk away, they leave the phone down for an hour or two, and then they forget about everything. But for you, you've got to go home with them, you've got to travel with them. How does that switch off sort of work when you have the family relationship, but you also have the football relationship?
Yeah, to be honest, it is quite hard to switch off. I kind of find myself sometimes being very kind of hyper aware of what's going on in training and match day environments, stuff like that, which can be a good and bad thing. But yeah, to answer your question, it is hard to switch off. I do as well at times. Everything's always much easier and smoother when you're winning. Compared to when you're losing, obviously, but that's what the kind of senior players are there for. The other coaching staff are there for, to speak with them as well, and it's not just that kind of one-way communication between myself and James.
In terms of, I suppose, I first met you in a different context at a wedding. Since that wedding, there's been a bit of a divorce with the bride and one of the bridesmaids, Steph and Anya, obviously have left the club. How did you feel when that kind of broke? Did you know it was coming? Were you disappointed, a little bit jealous? Or how does that, what were the emotions go through your mind?
No, I wouldn't be jealous. It wasn't, I don't think it was dealt with to the way that the likes of Stephanie and Anya would have liked it to have dealt with, in terms of people were aware of it when the league was still going on, when we're still trying to win the league. Which wasn't good, wasn't helpful or beneficial to the club or to any of the players at the time, or Steph and Anya as well. It was obviously a difficult situation for them to be having that in their mind, and they're trying to perform for Piemont at the same time. As I said, that shouldn't have happened. It shouldn't been common knowledge within the team at that specific time within the league, because it was a really key period for us to try win the league. I think before the Wexford game, we were still in contention of maybe still winning. That didn't help kind of with some of the players knowing about Rovers at the time. Completely respect their decision to go, and I don't think we're at a loss of it with the players that came in. We've got brilliant players that have come in.
We'll kind of tend to agree with you, I think, on that one.
Yeah.
I agree, though, on in that sense, because I was hearing weeks before the season was even ended that it was happening. Same way I was hearing about other players being approached and being offered. There's one in particular who'd left Shelburne who subsequently dropped for a game because had a conversation with them during that stage. So, like, for me, I can understand the distraction. But, Lauren, talk to me about that. Bring me back to that Wexford game. in the league. You were only like nearly a last kick of a game away from potentially going into a final day shootout, considering you'd had a massive dip in the middle of the season.
Yeah,
there was a lot of character within that side, and I think
exactly.
You can't always necessarily say it's all down to coach and it's all down to the management staff. They can only do so much. But on the pitch, talking about the character that you have on the pitch with the other leaders, like yourself stepping into more of a leadership role, because you've been in that team since you're 16, 17.
Like people would have completely wrote us off at that stage last year. We did bounce back. And like, we were unfortunate to lose very narrowly to Wexford in that game. As I said, it didn't help knowing that other players were moving, key players were moving. That was all up in the air. People were aware of it. People weren't saying it, not that way. So that was definitely a factor in why I think we didn't kind of push on towards the very end of the season as well. It wasn't helpful.
In terms of the team at the moment, it's got a very settled look to it. The same outfield 10 have started every single game so far. That must be kind of nice to know that there's a consistency there. You know, if you keep performing, you keep your place and everything's going really well and the team is just seemed to gel really, really well.
Yeah. I've never been kind of a part of a team that has showed that kind of shared willingness to want to win for each other. It was very kind of individualized with certain people last year. And, you know, for example, you see the Sligo game, we were 3-0 up. At that time, we were dominating the game. And, you know, the fourth goal we scored, if you see how happy, genuinely happy we were to celebrate, every single person celebrated Avril's goal at that time. And I think that's worth noticing from the outsider, kind of looking in at how kind of happy we were to score that fourth goal and to see what it means to us. Because it means so much to win now, because it's harder and harder each game compared to last year, the year before. The games have gotten so kind of narrowed down to kind of nil all, 1-0 wins, stuff like that. So we are really aware of the importance of like scoring. Same against DLR, scoring in that the kind of last few minutes is it's huge for us. And we really do kind of appreciate the kind of hard work to get in that goal collectively. I haven't seen that really last year or the year before. So it's really important to see this year with the girls that have come in and the girls that are already have been there as well.
Is it fair to say, though, some of the players who maybe come into Piemont this year probably have a bit of a point to prove, because maybe it hasn't worked out as much for them at other clubs, and this is an opportunity with a top team in the league for them to go and prove themselves. And you can see the likes of Carla McManus, Kate Mooney, how they've sort of taken the chances early on.
Yeah, you know, Becky has been great. Carla's been great. Avril's been great and she's been playing as well. Kate's on form. She's nearly scoring in every game. You've seen her reaction when we went 1-0 down in the Athlone game. That same drive and willingness from everyone to push on and try and bounce back and react. And Kate scored a goal from a really good kind of pressure from the team to push her on to score that goal. And I think last year that was a weakness that we lacked. When we were a goal down or things weren't going our way, we didn't really have that kind of mental strength to know how to deal with that. And that was really important for me personally, for me to see how the team reacted to going 1-0 down in Athlone to a very tough opposition in Athlone as well. So that was really important to see how we reacted to that.
With the start you've made, I suppose, of course, Wexford, of course, do have that 100% record as well, but they've just played a couple of games less than you. Are you surprised by how the season has gone? Did the Galway result at the weekend surprise you, the competitiveness of some of the teams against each other?
Yeah, I think it's getting more competitive. It did surprise me with Shell's defeat against Galway. And Shelburne are going to be hurting from that. They're going to use it as motivation going into Ayr game. As well as, obviously, I think Pearl is injured. She's probably not going to be playing tomorrow. And the type of the people at Shelburne, they'll want to do it for Pearl. That they'll use that as motivation tomorrow night as well. So, you know, we're aware of that going into the game as well tomorrow.
In terms of, you speak about Shells, like, yes, they have won in the last two games. They drew at Rovers and lost at Galway. But is it a case that this year you're more prepared about what you have to do rather than what Shelburne are going to bring?
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. I think, like, we're focusing a lot on ourselves within pre-season. I feel like the team is more kind of tactically astute to the players that we have and what we need to bring as a team. And, you know, implementing that in training as well. It's very kind of fluid conversation within from the players and the management and how we can be better and what we need to work on and stuff like that. There is a lot of focus on ourselves within training and, you know, off the pitch. Obviously, we would speak about the opposition and acknowledge them and stuff like that and respect them. But yeah, there is a lot of that kind of internal focus on our strengths because the team is a really strong team. You know, the media and people outside, they don't give P-Mounts the credit that they deserve. But, you know, it's a really talented squad. And, you know, I'm really happy to be in the team at this time. It's exciting.
Of course, there's a few players there to come back from this parish. Derval Byrne, of course, part of that squad as well, currently involved with her studies down in UL and played a bit of Gaelic as well. So that's kind of kept her out of the panel so far. But there is a huge potential. And even if we look at tomorrow night's games, you play Shells, it's always a classic in the league every time you meet.
Yeah.
Does the shorter season this year, the 20 games rather than 27 last year, does it put added pressure on the games like tonight? It's a twice off instead of a three times a year meeting now. You could put 8 points between you with a victory tomorrow night after only five games. That's a huge lead at that stage of the season.
Yeah, it just kind of, it shows how significant each game is. It was still like that last year, but, you know, having the two games now, you're always going to want to perform to the best of your ability, and it's going to pay off if you do well, and it really is going to show if you do lose down in long term.
It's midweek game. Midweek games, though, Lauren. Do you like them? Do you hate them? What do you think of midweek games?
I wouldn't be a fan of them. It's kind of difficult. Like, there's everyone in the league would probably agree with me on that. You know, we have doctors, vets, people working night shifts, like, you name it. We have all them kind of players working, and it's difficult to schedule that around work and. It's just something that the girls kind of get on with, but yeah, it's not ideal. But yeah, you just kind of have to deal with it as well sometimes.
What can people expect tomorrow night? What kind of a clash are we looking at? You mentioned Pearl Slattery might be out, of course, their talismanic captain. In terms of the game, what can a neutral or a fan of the league expect if they pop along or watch on LOI TV?
Yeah, I promise you, it's going to be a very exciting game. It's going to be a tight game. It's going to be a very kind of aggressive game from both teams. You know, I love playing Shelburne, especially in P-Mount. It's really enjoyable, especially when you win. But yeah, as I said, they're going to be highly motivated. Shelburne are a really good team. You know, they have really good players, and especially with Pearl out, that's a big loss for them. But at the same time, they'll want to do well for, and you know, we'll be aware of that. We're not going to focus on that, but. It's worth kind of highlighting for ourselves going into the game that it's not going to be easy, and we'll hope to try keep our consistency going to get 5 out of 5. But yeah, it's going to be a really hard match, but exciting as well.
Do you think, though, by the fact that you've started with 4 out of 4 and potentially got the 5 out of 5, it sort of puts the pressure on the other teams? Like Breffni mentioned Wexford being still 100%, but they've only played two games, whereas points on the board in this league are probably more important than the likes of games in hand or playing catch up.
It's really important, as you said. I think it's just for us, we're kind of trying to be consistent, and you know, it is really satisfying to be able to say we've won 4 out of 4, but at the same time we're still trying to just kind of work on where the areas that we can be better and just bring that in tomorrow, because 5 out of 5 would be excellent going into the break. You know, it'd be huge for us.
Speaking about kind of that clash, I know you played them 4 times last year, you were on the losing side 3 times. Can you read that much into that, given how much both squads have changed over the last 3 to 4 months?
I wouldn't really be thinking about that. There's quite a freshness to our squad. It's the same as Shelburne. It's nearly like not new teams playing each other, but there is new personalities within both teams. It's not going to have changed that much, but it'll still be the same kind of challenge and same drive from both teams.
Breffni, just so you're aware, Piemont actually won the last of the games, don't forget.
I am aware of that. I was just looking at the season as a whole. In terms of, I suppose, where we go from here, any chance we might see Lauren O'Callaghan belter to win the game tomorrow night? Would you like that?
Maybe, No, it doesn't happen often. Maybe we'll see. One at the edge of the box, maybe. Pulled out, I'll have a strike and hopefully it doesn't go over the bar. I'll let Becky and the wingers and Kate deal with that. I'm sure there will be goals tomorrow.
There was one goal from you last season, so we'll see how maybe that could, it could be the day. It could be the day. We've got our fingers crossed. We have a good luck charm on the podcast here. We had a run there the whole way through last season where whoever was in the podcast scored at the weekend or won at the weekend. And I'm not saying anything, but Alvin Heisen was on the show last week. And we
performed, right. So,
46 games later, they got a win. So.
All the credit will go to Final Whistle now.
We're gonna clip that and take it. Yeah. All right. Thanks so much for joining us. The best of luck to you for your teammates tomorrow night. And we'll chat to you shortly.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thanks.
Interesting thoughts there from Lauren O'Callaghan ahead of that big clash tomorrow. Normally a top of the table encounter. Shell's not quite there just yet, but it's still very, very early days in the season. Aaron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Lauren spoke very well. It's an intriguing game. It's going to be one of these that are it's going to be tight. I suspect there will be a couple of goals, but I don't see an awful lot between the two teams. And I think from a Shelburne point of view, they'll really be up against it. And like as Lauren said, for me, there's a togetherness in that Piemont team. She's right. A lot of media aren't talking about Piemont this year. They're talking about Shamrock Rovers, Shelburne, where Piemont have just gradually gone under the radar. And I think it's probably been a big thing from their point of view that they've been able to do that and just continue to win football games. They haven't won them all easy, as I just say. Like, you look at the DLR game, was an 88-minute winner. And then, like, even last week against Bowes, it was a penalty from Karen and then a lovely finish from Kate Mooney. She gets herself a bit of space. Bowes will probably be disappointed with the defender for the second goal, but Kate takes it lovely into the bottom corner. And it just shows the togetherness. You can even see, even looking at the celebrations there, as to what Lauren was saying. And I think it's interesting times, definitely, at Piemont, because everybody sort of said, Piemont are gone, Piemont are this, Piemont are that. They've shown that they're not. They've been a really consistent football team, and I think that's probably something that James O'Callaghan can take a good bit of credit for with his management staff and his players.
Absolutely. And I think what's interesting is when they fell behind that opening day of the season after 4 minutes to Athlone, they haven't conceded since. But more importantly, they did get two goals in the first half that day, but every other goal, all of the eight other goals across the 3.5 games have all come after the 55th minute in matches. So they've kind of taken a while to get into games, but when they do, we've seen that bit of quality. We've seen that bit of, that clinicalism in front of, that's not a word, but that clinical nature in front of goal where they're able to put teams to the sword once they do get ahead.
The only thing is, if I'm going to be honest, yes, it's great they've scored after the 55th minute, but they'll probably still not be happy with that first half performances at times. Like, you look against Piemont, against Shell Bowes the weekend, they probably should have scored early in the first half a couple of goals. So they should have been a couple up before halftime. They should have been in control, but it was sort of, they just didn't take the chances and let Bowes build back into that game. Yes, the second half, they come on strong and got the two goals. But if they can get the first half performances in order and actually take some of the early chances, they could have scored 5 or 6 against Bowes.
Yeah, let's take a look at some of the other games across the league over the weekend. And of course, we've already touched on the two games we've opened the show with. That's the Galway result in Shells and the Sligo results, the Treaty result in Sligo, where both teams came away with 2-1 away wins. Big results for both sides. Let's maybe look at the Galway side, because we found some similarities maybe in terms of the new girls in the league, albeit with a history there from Galway WFC. They've come into the league. They've beaten Shells, the league champions, coming from behind to win. Unlikely, unexpected, but a really, really deserved win. And we've seen echoes of that maybe the previous year.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you look at when Sligo Rovers beat Shelburne on TG Carr, they sort of drifted away a little bit after. They haven't won a game since, which is probably the disappointing thing from Steve Feeney's side. But you'd have a concern that Galway, it was a massive high beating Shelburne. The problem is now is they've made that statement. They actually have to go and back it up and get more results, because there's no point in beating Shelburne once and then just saying, yes, great, great result, we'll celebrate that. If you don't back it up, it was pretty much a pointless win for them, because it's a difficult lead to get results in. And I think momentum in this league is probably the most important thing, and something that's probably understated an awful lot, that a bit of momentum in this league can bring you a long, long way.
Well, do you think they have the quality to sustain that level of performance and produce results that maybe we didn't see from Sligo last year after they'd had that big win?
Like, there's no doubt, you don't want to be disrespectful here when I say this, that they have a better squad than Sligo have. There's no doubt about that. Sligo have some good individual players. They've got some good players who are playing well, but Galway have got a better squad. Like, you look at Aoife Thompson scoring, she was superb. Trace Kinnevy is a brilliant player. Like, they've got great, great players, and they're starting to sort of slowly implement that Phil Trill style. It's slightly different to what we would have seen before. But the problem is it's not going to be easy for them to do it. Like, we've seen in the first couple of weeks that the Bowes result in particular, from they left it late against Cork. So it's probably a bit early to say yes or no whether they can. But I think the Athlone game will give us a little bit of an indication as to was it a once off, or can they, if they can back it up. Athlone haven't had the greatest of starts, but Tommy Hewitt's side will definitely be fired up for that game. And I think it'll be a testament as to where Galway are when we see how they get on against Athlone.
Yeah, it's funny. We had a chat about this off air in the preparation for this particular episode of the show. We wanted to take a look maybe at how teams have done over the last period of last, I suppose, the period that Lauren kind of mentioned when she talked about the turmoil in the squad across the league, but in PMO particularly towards the end of last season. So what we've done is we've actually taken a league table for the last maybe third of last year, from the 1st of August right through to this weekend's fixtures and results, and it has some really interesting reading on it. Let's bring it up here just for a second, and we'll take a look at that, because obviously Piemont, if I just sort it by points per game, you see Piemont there blowing everybody way at the top of the league over the last 13 rounds of fixtures, and that includes the new teams in the league and Galway WFC who dropped out. Piemont United, 2.69 points per game. That's an impressive tally by anybody's standards.
It's a superb tally. It's a superb tally. Like, if you look at it, it's 35 points from a possible 39 points, Breffney. Like, it's two draws is what they've had. that's the funny thing. It's the draw against Wexford Utes and I'm trying to think who the other draw was, but it's two draws. No, it's a draw. Could have been that low, but it's two draws, that's all it is. Like, and otherwise they'd have been at a perfect points per game. And like, you look at, compare that to, We can't really compare it to Shamrock Rovers, because Shamrock Rovers only played three games. But like, even compare it to a Wexford, Athlone and Shelburne, like, we've seen the slump that Shell's had after the Champions League. Like, that's a massive points per game difference from the other sides. It's like it's 9 and 10 points depending on the amount of games they played. And like, for Piemont, I think that just shows that they made that late run towards the end of the year. And if they hadn't had the bit of a down slump in the second half of the year, that they may have got over the line. And I think that Wexford Utes game will definitely sit with them for a while, that they conceded the late goal to allow Wexford to have the last day showdown with Shelburne. And that's one that will sit there. Plus, if we add the 3 points from the Sligo game, like, how different things could have been if it hadn't happened.
In terms of, I suppose, we look at this information in front of us here, Shell's the same, more or less, a couple of percentage points away from DLR and Bowles, the same gap to Piemont at the top. Is that a worry for Noel King, that just his side aren't picking up results in the way they'd like to?
Obviously it's a worry, but the problem you have to look at from a Noel King point of view is the way they finished the season last year. And like, if anybody listens back to the first couple of episodes of the season, the question that I'd always pose to you after the Cork and Bowes game was, how good were Shells? Did we really learn anything from Shells from the first two games? I think we learned a lot from them against Shamrock Rovers, but that was a massive intensity-driven game, whereas they just couldn't bring that same intensity to the next game against Galway. And I think that's what probably caught them a little bit. And I think it's definitely a worry. Yeah, so we don't know like what the damage is with Pearl. Like I'm hearing she's okay, but what's okay? Nobody's actually come out and said she's done this, she's done that. She had to leave the game, go to the hospital in an ambulance because of the injury. It looked as though it was an arm or a shoulder injury. So we don't know if she's not fit. That's a massive leader for them. You're looking at where's the leaders. Yes, the likes of Jesse Stapleton stepped up an awful lot, Rachel Graham. But like on Saturday, the big thing you'd say for Shelburne is when's the last time you've seen Noel Murray also substituted in the game. It was sort of one of them that things weren't working for them, and they have a tendency if they're not going well that they get frustrated quite easily.
Yeah, let's move on to the other game, the big surprise. We've already touched on a little bit, but that Treaty United result, I'm not sure if it was 45 or 46 games without a win, but it's a huge achievement for them to finally break that duck. It's very early in the season for Albion. I know he was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. They took a couple of poor results since then, but they've got to be happy with that result at the weekend.
Yeah, young Hannah Sadie up top, I think she's only 15 as well, scoring the winner for them. Like, you have to be extremely happy. I don't think he probably would have expected the win to come this early. I think if he'd have walked away with a 1-0 loss or something like that to Sligo and a good team performance, he probably would have said, yeah, we're happy, we're building in the right direction. But the fact he's actually got the win, I don't know, is that maybe counterintuitive towards them that it puts additional pressure on the an expectation on the game this week as well against Cork, who are also winless. Like, but to end the streak was important, and it was huge because for young players it's always difficult. The longer that goes on, people will talk about how many games it was. It brings you back to when Cork City struggled for a couple of years ago, or Cork City Women when they were a separate entity. Like, that brings it back to then. And the problem is in the National League, we don't really want that. We want all the teams competitive. So we're sort of hoping that Albion can get a bit of a strong will, and they can pick up more points, because realistically, that sort of region of the country, we need strong football, because that's part of the growth of the women's game going forward, is to have a strong team in that area. And it's great that they got the result. From a Sligo point of view, you're probably bitterly disappointed. You're looking at the Shamrock Rovers game at the start of the season, you're sort of thinking, so close. Then Wexford, they'd sort of went off the boil in the last 20, 25 minutes and got punished. And then you're thinking, okay, opportunities. And then it just hasn't really hit. And it'd be a difficult task probably for Steve Feeney to pick his players up after that defeat at the weekend.
Absolutely, I suppose. Looking at Treaty, though, you mentioned that game against Cork this weekend. It's an ideal opportunity. Sorry, this weekend. It's tomorrow evening, midweek, of course, this week. They're home against Cork. Cork behind them in the league. We could actually see a situation where Treaty were to edge ahead of even DLR or Athlone, depending on how results go. Two wins on the bounce for Treaty, up to maybe 7th, 8th in the table, 6 points clear of the bottom two sides. That would be a huge result for this section of the league campaign.
Yeah, and I don't read much into this when I say this, but pre-season, Treaty also beat Cork in pre-season, so they have had a win against another National League side in pre-season as well. And it's a confidence builder for them. But if they can get that result, they'll probably be disappointed then that an international break is coming, because they'll have lost the bit of momentum that they've gained. But it'd be huge for them, and especially in the Markets Field as well. It's not going to be an easy place for Cork to go. There's no doubt that Cork are definitely going to be favourites in this game. But things haven't gone well for Danny Murphy's side this season, and it's not going to be a trip that they look forward to. They probably would have hoped that Treaty wouldn't have got the win, because they know it's going to give them confidence and it's going to spur them on. And like the foreign inclusions for Treaty, some of them have made real impacts. Claire Winters was brilliant, as we said about earlier in the show. And I think for them, it's a case that if they build that, then they're looking upwards rather than constantly looking behind their shoulders.
Yeah, two other teams met, of course, last weekend. DLR and Athlone scored a straw. I think it's probably 2 points dropped for both teams as they slip into the bottom half of the table.
Yeah, it was. If you were to ask me, that was the one game I probably said it won't be nil all at the weekend, and all of a sudden it was by all accounts it wasn't a great game up until towards the last 15-20 minutes. I was listening to Sean Comer's match report from it, and he was sort of saying that himself, that chances were laid on in the game, and it was one of them that both sides were probably disappointed they didn't take one of them chances. Nil all doesn't really do anybody any favours at this stage, especially considering DLR had got the win the week before, not able to back it up, and Athlone have had a bit of a slow start, a stuttered start this season.
Yeah, interesting times ahead for both of those teams. Piemont, of course, we touched on it earlier with Lauren. They had a 2-0 win in Bowes. Your thoughts of the game at Dalymount Park?
Probably should have been 2 or 3 nil up at half time. They'd be disappointed they weren't. And then when they get the current penalty, keeper goes the right way, just can't get to it. And then it was a lovely finish from Kate Mooney. It was a comfortable enough second half once the first goal came for Piemont. And the train just keeps marching on. You can see that they're trying to do things well and the right way. And I think for James O'Callaghan, he'd be just pleased at the fact that Bowes had beaten them last year and got a point off them. So happy just to walk away from Dalymount with 3 points and look forward to the big game tomorrow night. But for Piemont, it's just they just keep going. They're motoring under the carpet, and they're just doing what they've got to do.
Cork v Wexford, of course, called off to be played later in the summer. For a lot of reasons, I don't like when they take games out of rounds and play them further down the line. But talk to me about your thoughts on. We haven't spoken about this off air, but talk to me about your thoughts on the whole scenario where the Women's National League game scheduled for the day before the under 21 international and then pulled in favour of the boys because of the weather. Is that a good look for the league, for the FAI, or was it something that just had to happen?
100%, it's not a good look. It's definitely not a good look. It makes the league look amateurish, especially when you're talking about professionalism. Like, yes, if the weather comes, you call the pitch off, but by all accounts, the weather didn't necessarily come the way they were expecting it. And just for the fact that you're calling off for an under 21 international, yeah, listen, don't get me wrong, it's great to see the under 21s playing the game in Cork, but when you're trying to talk about professional leagues, professional standards, things like that, it's sort of disappointing then when this is called off. But I think the fact that it was the Munster FA call requested it to be offered, and unfortunately with them being the owners of the stadium in Cork City and Cork City only being tenants, when they sort of pulled up in like, we want this off, we can't, your hands are sort of tied. The only alternative, and I don't know whether we'd like it, is if you're going to a non-league ground to play the game, and then we're sort of talking about the playing in Turner's Cross and taking it out. So it's a catch-22 situation. And the biggest thing, yes, we're not pleased about the fact that it was called off, but the fact that we actually have a refix date, everything is out the day when it's called off, is actually better. So we know when the game is. There's none of this like we used to have where you're sort of waiting to see when they're going to refix it. They've actually given us the date there and then. I think that's the most positive part of it. And I think they've actually reversed the fixtures. I think they're going to play the game in Turner's Cross when they were due to play in Ferry Carrick Park. And then the game at Carrick Park, I think, is a week before or 10 days before, 10 days after.
Yeah, it's been moved 10 days beforehand. So they both, I think, down for July. Interesting to see how that pans out. But it does mean that from Wexford's point of view, there will be that game or two behind. And from Cork's point of view, there'll be that game or two behind. And when you're trying to build momentum and trying to stay in touch with teams, it's very difficult when you've got that game. And in Wexford's case, 2 games less than some teams around them. It's very difficult to build the momentum and keep it going through the next few seasons, because Wexford will play tomorrow night and that'll be their only game they play in maybe
2.5 weeks, and only game in a month nearly.
And another week or two to the next round of games. So that's tough from a Wexford point of view, but I'm sure they'll be quite happy to play those games.
The only thing for me though is they're going into a game against Shamrock Rovers after having not played it since the second round of fixtures, which is quite difficult as well, because you'd like to have it. But the only thing you'd say is to their benefit is the fact that Shamrock Rovers also didn't have a game last week as well. So it's sort of a bit of a catch-22 from both sides. That's why I don't like the odd number in the league. I always prefer to have the even number, just so everybody plays every time. And especially when we're looking at international breaks and things like that, because Sligo Rovers as well don't play midweek, but then they've a couple of weeks off as well. So it can be quite difficult.
Absolutely. Let's take a quick look at the results of the weekend and those games as you see them there. Bohemians 0, Piemont United 2, Cork City and Wexford Utes, as we've just spoken about, postponed to later in the season. DLR Waves and Athlone a stalemate there in the Belfield Bowl, while Galway were surprise winners at Talca Park against the league champions Shelburne. And Treaty United, their first win in a couple of years against Sligo Rovers. They'll be quite happy with that down in the Markets Field. Of course, they're back in action tomorrow. We'll talk about their fixtures in just a few moments. But first, maybe let's take a look at the league table. And as you can see there, Piemont United out on top of the table. 4 wins from 4, 12 points. They enjoy a 5-point lead over Shelburne, who they host tomorrow night in PRL Park. Shamrock Rovers on 7 points also, but with one game less played. And Wexford Youth still 100%, but only those two games played. So they're back on 6 points in fourth place. Galway and Bohemians joining them on that mark. Athlone and DLR, after their draw at the weekend, they're on 4 points apiece. Treaty off the bottom for the first time in a couple of games, a couple of rounds, maybe 40-odd rounds of games. But they'll be quite happy to have a win in the, or at least a one in the W column of the league table for the time being. Sligo Rovers and Cork City pointless at the moment. But of course, Cork and Treaty play each other tomorrow night. We'll be interested to see how that goes. We'll chat about that in just a couple of moments. Top scorers charts as we stand. A couple of disputed ones in here, but we're giving them to Jessie Stapleton until we hear otherwise. 4 goals for her in 4 games. Not bad, particularly when you find out she's their centre half or a defensive midfielder. But some set-piece goals there from Jessie, and she'd be quite happy. She doesn't care who scores them as long as they're going into the opponent's net. Jamie Thompson with her hat-trick, having her on 3 goals. Maddie Gibson and Kate Mooney. And Lauren mentioned her earlier, getting almost a goal a game. It's 3 and 4 for her so far. She did have another one recently as well. So a couple of players then on 2 points. Chloe Singleton, Calma Hamrick, Anya O'Gorman, Becky Watkins, Jenna Slattery with that fine free kick at the weekend against Shells to win that game. Megan Smith-Lynch and Karen Duggan with a penalty in Daly Mount to keep herself in the record. There's a lot of players back on 1 goal. We won't go through them. You can go through all those stats on finalwhistle.ie.
Do you know what's interesting just on that, though, Rodney? It's Jamie Thompson, 3 goals in 161 minutes.
Oh, it's phenomenal. And even then, I think it's probably in a much smaller window in that
the hat-trick. Well, the hat-trick all came in the second half after being a substitute.
Yeah, no, it's she's had an impressive start, and I think she's definitely one for the future of the league. And I think what's even more significant, I think, for Jamie's performance is that she's in a squad that has some really big names in it, in that position, in that kind of attack-minded position. There's probably 5 or 6 girls there with Ireland caps or very, very close to Ireland caps. And she's coming through as a youngster. She's getting an opportunity and she's taking it with both hands. And I think we'll see plenty of her before the league is out. At the other end, of course, people who might have a word to say about whether she will or will not find the back of the net over the next couple of weeks. There's 10 goalkeepers now who have kept clean sheets through the season. Niamh Reid-Burke and Courtney Maguire are top of the table, while Niamh Coombs, Nyla Peterkin, and Maeve Williams, Kira Glacken, Amanda Budden, Abigail O'Neill, and Eve Bandana and Rachel Kelly, all with clean sheets left on the table. I think there's only 3 clubs, and it won't surprise you to hear they are Cork, Treaty, and Sligo Rovers, who haven't managed to keep a clean sheet so far. But there's a couple of double-ups there. 2 Piemont United goalkeepers there, 2 Athlone United goalkeepers there, Athlone Town goalkeepers there. We've seen that in recent years where maybe Amanda Budden has won the Golden Glove and deservedly so. But then you look at maybe Piemont have had more clean sheets, but just spread across 2 goalkeepers. So are we in danger of Niamh Reid-Burke potentially missing out on that again because they're accommodating 2 keepers?
No. He won't play 2 keepers. He won't do that often. I suspect Niamh Coombs will play 4 or 5 games max this season. You're not going to take your vice captain out of your team on a regular basis, because Niamh Reid-Burke is just too good to not be playing for them. And I think leadership across the back as well, and like, she's just that sort of personality. I don't think you can leave her out your team too often.
Yeah. Fixtures for this week, of course, all games tomorrow night, 7:45 kickoffs in all games. Shamrock Rovers and Wexford Utes, a really, really big challenge for Shamrock Rovers. Wexford Utes have a big task. They haven't played in 2.5 weeks, so it's going to be a big one for them to get themselves up for a trip to Tallaght Stadium. But if anywhere is going to motivate you, Tallaght Stadium is likely to be top of that list. Piemont and Shells, as always, top of the table clash. Normally, it is technically 1 and 2 in the table, but Shells need a result to keep in touch. It could be as big as 8-point gap between the sides if Piemont win that tomorrow night. Athlone and Galway, the neighbours, they know each other so well. So many girls used to be in both dressing rooms for these two sides. I think 7 or 8 players have played for both teams and will feature tomorrow night as well. So that's probably, for me, a one to watch tomorrow night. Treaty and Cork, again, 2 rivals at the lower end of the table. They'll be looking to get some points on the board. Chance for Cork to get their first result of the season as well, while the Dublin Derby of Bows and DLR Waves takes place in Daly Mount. Again, no more than that lone Galway. Plenty of players there who have experience in both dressing rooms as recently as the last five games, Aaron.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I give out one thing about the fixtures for this week?
You can.
There's no games this weekend. There's three Dublin derbies all on at the same time on a Wednesday evening. Like, I would have loved to see one Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and Thursday night, just because they spread the fixtures out with no games at the weekend. And I think just for that fact, like, because so many people would have went to more. On a Rovers point of view, we haven't really touched on this yet, is the fact that Aoife Kelly, who would have started for him against Shelbourne, is missing. I think it's Avian Fleming, and there's one other missing who are away with the Ireland under-17s, who play tomorrow against France. If they win, they qualify for the European Championships. Three players who've been in and around the Rovers senior squad, and some who played, missing out on a big game against Wexford Youth. So Rovers will be at a bit of a disadvantage as well, to be missing out them sort of players, especially with Savannah McCarthy still missing. So it'll be interesting to see what Colly O'Neill does to combat it.
Hypothetically, if there's a draw in Tala and a win for Piemont, which isn't beyond the realms of possibility, we could see a massive gap already. It'd be a 7-point gap from Piemont right back. A quarter of the season gone. Only 15 games to play, though, which kind of brings it almost to last year's halfway point, effectively.
But it's what I said. It's what I said to Lauren. It's, you'd rather points on the board. So, if from a Piemont point of view, if Piemont get the win, and that happens, for Piemont, you'd rather have the points on the board than the likes of the Wexford, where you have the games in hand and you're chasing results. So, like, for Piemont, they're in a good position. Even if both games end the draw, I'd still think Piemont are in a strong position. And there's a couple of big games coming up after the international window, whereas it'll really potentially shake the table up. And I think the next month to 6 weeks we'll really potentially see a one or two team emerge, and we'll see who's gonna be really there for the fight. But it's a league this year where nearly every team can beat everybody. So the top eight can definitely beat each other. And it's one of them that it's a case that if you can break away, you can potentially assert some dominance on the league. Whereas we probably would have said we maybe didn't expect to see it, but Piemont are in a good position.
Let's take a quick whistle stop through the five fixtures for this midweek round of games. Shamrock Rovers, Wexford Youths, your thoughts on how that's going to go?
I honestly know it's going to go, and that's the funny thing. It could be a game. If Wexford click, Wexford could score a couple of goals. But Jamie Thompson's been brilliant for Shamrock Rovers, and she's been linking the play up superbly. And the funny thing is, we're not talking about Stephanie Zambra and Anya O'Gorman as much now. We're talking about the youngsters who've clicked. Whereas I think from a Rovers viewpoint, I think that they need a big game out of Abby Larkin if they are to be successful. She hasn't really maybe had the best start of the season. But I think it's going to be a game that will be decided by fine margins. I wouldn't be surprised if Wexford do get the 3 points, though.
Okay, peas and shells, always a tough one to call.
It is. Shells, Piemont have the momentum. I think shells will definitely be desperate for a comeback and a bounce back, but it's not going to be easy going to PRL Park, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was a draw, but I also wouldn't be surprised if Piemont nicked it.
Yes. It's strange. There's so many tight games between these sides, and then this game where just one team just opens the other one up, and it's 4-0 or 5-0 or even bigger results sometimes.
The 5-0 win for Piemont a couple of seasons ago, nobody expected it. Shells were on top, hit the crossbar, had chances, and all of a sudden Piemont go and obliterating. Like, that's the dangers that it is from both sides. They can open each other out, but I don't think it will be. I think it could potentially be a 2-1 or a 1-1 draw.
Okay. Moving to the Midlands, Athlone versus Galway. I'm hoping to be at this game myself, but it promises to be an exciting game between two sides. As we said, they played together with NUI Galway, a lot of these girls. They won the universities 10 days ago. I know we spoke to Billy Cleary last week, even a week ago. Sorry, we're midweek now. But in terms of what they might be able to do, is it a case of knowing each other so well they might just cancel each other out, or will it be a cracker again?
There hasn't been a lot between them. That's the funny thing in the last couple of years. They've always been close games. But the thing is, there's always been goals in the games. I do expect goals again. I don't think it'll be a dull affair. I think there will be a couple of goals in it. Galway, they're going to have to keep Maddie Gibson quiet. If they give her half a chance, she'll put the ball in their net. From a Galway point of view, though, if Phil Trill can back this up with a second win in 4 days, I think that'll be huge, and it'll be a massive confidence confidence booster for them. There's no reason why they can't, especially considering Athlone haven't had the best of starts. They're losing the Piemont at home as well. I think it's going to be difficult for Athlone. Oh, they've got a bit of momentum, but I'd probably say Athlone should do it, but I don't think it'll be easy.
Yeah, Galway haven't had much between any of the sides so far this year. 1-0, the normal scoreline for them. Interesting to see how that pans out tomorrow. 3-D and Cork, chance for Alban Heise and his side to add a second win in a week after basically 2 years of no results. Can they do it against Cork, or are Cork just a little bit stronger than them?
I think they can do it. I genuinely think they can do it. Yes, Cork are a decent side. They haven't maybe got a bit of luck that they would have wanted. The Janice Lowry goal, the free kick, was probably a bit of a sucker blow for them. But I wouldn't be surprised if Treaty go and get a second win. A win is massive, especially to a team like that. And I think from a Cork point of view, they've struggled to get wins in the last while. I think, if I'm not mistaken, from the table we had earlier, I think they'd only got, I think it was 2 wins since August. So they hadn't had an awful lot of wins. And I think Cork could just come up short again, I think.
I have them now for 9 points since August.
So they've had three wins since August, and probably two of them are probably against Treaty, and I'd say the 3 wins are Treaty and Sligo, I would say.
Yeah, I think so. Interesting to see. Final game, Bowes DLR. Again, these two sides know each other very well. Players back and forth between them over the last 12 months in particular. Who's going to be the happier of the two managers come the end of the game, Sean Byrne or Graham Kelly?
I hate to say this, but anytime these sides have met, and I don't mean to put a dampener on it, they've been full and dreary affairs most of the time. And I wouldn't be surprised tomorrow if it's another one. I don't mean to be bad, because I get on well with both managers. I get on well with both managers and both clubs, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is the dreary game of the weekend, of the midweek fixtures, unfortunately. And I think it probably will end a nil-all draw.
Yeah, in 7 games between them, they've scored 5 goals and conceded 5 goals across those 7 games. So not exactly goal fests. So we'll be interested to see how that pans out.
But just don't forget, though, Breffney, one of them games was actually a 3-0 victory. I can't remember who it was, which way it was. One of them was actually a game that had to be pulled due to COVID. I think Bowes conceded 3 points, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, no, I'm done with this season so far. They've only managed 4 or 5
goals. But even if you look at the games between them, they've all either been nil. I think there was one game that DLR won 3-0, and then other than that, they've all been nil alls or one all since the Bowes have come into the league.
2-1 the last game in September. Bowes won it in Dalymount Park. But yeah, a lot of 1-0 victories and 0-0 victories. It's pretty low scoring affair, as you said. So we'll see. I think I see as I'm looking through it here, there's 2 in 2020 finished 0-0, and another 2 last year. So it's going to be, or yeah, one each year, you know, you get the drill. There's been enough of them over the years. In terms of your activities, where are you going to be tomorrow night?
I'm going to Tala. I'm looking forward to it as well. I think it's going to be a cracking game. I think I'm really interested to see how Emily Corbett does against Shamrock Rovers, and if, look at her partnership with Rhianna Jarrett. If the two of them click together, I think they could score a bucket of goals. Obviously, Rhianna scored her 100th goal in 111 games recently, and I think the two of them will link well. It'll be an enthralling game, and I expect it to be nearly of the same intensity as the Shells Rovers game a couple of weeks ago.
Absolutely. We're just running through those fixtures. Again, all games tomorrow night. Home teams, obviously, at home. Get along to a game if you can. If you can't, LOI TV has them all for you. €5 per match are free if you've got the season pass already purchased. Shamrock Rovers and Wexford Youth still do battle in Tala. Shells visit PRL Park to play at Piemont, while Galway make the journey to the Midlands to face Athlone Town. Treaty United host Cork City at the Markets Field. And finally, a Dublin derby. Plenty of them this year with the 5 teams in the capital. There's 4 teams in the capital? 4 teams in the capital.
There's actually 5 in the capital this year. I want to get your opinion on that. Is it too many Dublin teams?
Yes and no. I think that's, if you look at the population of the country, half the people live in Dublin, so half the teams being in Dublin makes sense in terms of giving opportunities to girls to play. Why should a girl in Treaty or in Limerick or Sligo or Galway have 20-odd spaces to get when the population numbers are so much bigger in the capital? And I don't think you can put a limit on it. It's the way it works in the men's. I think there's 9 teams out of the 20 in or around the M50. So I think it's, if you go from Drogheda down to Bray, really, and even Longford would be very Dublin-based, and Athlone maybe even would have a fairly strong Dublin presence as well in that squad. So even Wexford would have a fairly big presence of Dublin players. So that's where the players are. That's where the quality players are. I don't think it's right to put a limit on it. I personally would like to see a restructure of the league, but I think the league, it'd be interesting maybe to have someone from the league on in the coming weeks if we can, but I think the league want more teams in there. I think they want to expand the league. I think there's definitely a case, and I think the table we showed earlier, I'll bring it back up just to represent it, but I think there's very much a case of arguing that those bottom three in particular, you can ignore Galway WRFC for the time being, but if you look at from Galway United up, you've got 8 teams that are relatively competitive, averaging 1.5 points a game, which is a solid performance. Cork, Treaty and Sligo, I think you could probably argue out of their depth. And so I think would be interesting to see a second division, first division even, sorry, should I say, a second tier in the league. I know we spoke about it off air. We might do a thing on it next week's show when we've got a bit less of game action to talk about. But I think I'd love to see a whole host of League of Ireland sides making the step up into senior women's football. I think there's a few knocking on the door. Dundalk, Drogheda, Cove, Longford have an under-17 team this year. Finn Harps have an under-17 an under-19 team this year. There's others, Waterford, I think, are in the under-17 league as well this year. So there are moves afoot, and I think there are definitely cases, I think Bray Wanderers there too, where you could look at having maybe a regionalised first division with 12 or 16 teams in it. I think Cork, Treaty and Sligo would be the best teams in that, and I say that with the greatest respect to those three clubs, but I don't think anyone could argue that they wouldn't benefit from a year where they're up against slightly lower quality opposition week in, week out, and they have a really good chance to build some really strong clubs in those areas if they were a little bit more competitive week in, week out.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Like, the points per game doesn't lie, and if you look at the results, bar the result for Sligo against Shells, and I know Sligo beat Wexford in the first half of the season, majority of their points tend to come against each other. Like, people that say they got 3 points against Pimount, but the Pimount 3 points were unfortunate due to a question of player eligibility. So it's a tough one, but I think it's definitely something that we'd love to explore, especially in terms of overall, and if we could get represented from the league to have the open conversation. But I think you're right in saying that there is a gap, and unfortunately the only fear is that the gap could get bigger.
Well, I think the gap is going to get bigger, and that's why a second tier would allow those clubs I mentioned, and there's probably 8 or 10 of them really obvious targets out there. It would allow them a kind of a stepping stone into the senior league and into the senior grade, where they're not going out to get hammered by a Rhianna Jarrett or an O'Neill Gorman or the really top international players that are spread across the league now. And I think it would allow that next stepping stone for all of those clubs into the next level, and with a proper promotion relegation between them. Even if it's just a playoff, even if the bottom team plays the top team in a playoff, because the gulf we've seen in women's sports over the years, the DWSL used to be the same back in the day, where the one team that came up would replace the bottom team, and it was a yo-yo. The same teams would swap each year. If I have no problem with a no automatic relegation from the Premier Division, as long as there is a playoff system in place that if a team is particularly poor, they can drop out, and if a team is better, then they get the spot. And I think it's something that needs to be looked at. Maybe there has to be, because of rules, an automatic relegation.
But even if it's a case that you have like the bottom two teams in a league, but something we'll delve more into. If you have the bottom two teams in a league and the top two in the next league, and they go into a playoff where they play each other once, and the top two teams stay up, and the bottom two teams stay in the first, and then you know, at least you've got an opportunity. But I think you're right. It's something we will explore. It's just the only thing I will say is, and this is something that, and I don't mean to sound bad here when I do, but I'm glad to see, is that we don't see as many players traveling to Dublin now that we did 4 or 5 years ago, which is brilliant, because they're actually willing to play with the likes of the Athlones. They're willing to play with the Galways. Whereas we used to see, like, you remember Heather Payne, Lisa Casserly, used to travel from Galway to Piemont. You used to have it where players were playing.
Yes, Dermot Byrne earlier, traveling 2 hours to Leitrim every.
Where now it seems to be players, if they're playing if they're from down the country, they seem to be living in Dublin, and they're, you know, their work commitments have them here, which means that they're playing local here, where they're not traveling multiple hours, because I don't think that's good for the league either, having players travel, like Heather Payne done it when she was 16, traveling to Piemont 2-3 times a week.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, that is all we have time for. It's going to be an exciting round of games tomorrow night, and I'm hoping to be in Athlone, and you're hoping to be in Shamrock Rovers. All things going well, but we'll be back next week. I know it's an off week for the league, but we will be back with a review of tomorrow night's games and also maybe a little look at the international fixtures coming up over the next couple of weeks. Aaron, as always, pleasure having your company for the last hour or so. To Laura Callaghan, who joined us earlier on from Piemont, the best of luck to her and everyone in the league tomorrow night. Hope you all enjoy your games. We'll be back with you next week. Talk to you then.